I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third-generation cure master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
Live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. We are in the back of Roberta's Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report on this beautiful Thursday. We're happy to have you all here listening and tuning in. We have an awesome show planned for today. Killer lineup. We'll be talking crop to cup. This is something new for us on the show. We'll be having the producer themselves and the consumer here in studio talking with us. And Erin, I will let you go ahead and introduce who those two special guests are.
Thanks, Heather. And I concur. We are stoked to have in the studio Sam Penix, co-owner of Everyman Espresso, one of the premier coffee shops in New York City, located on 13th between 3rd and 4th Avenue. And Sam has been a barista for many years, super seasoned. She took third in the Northeast Regional Barista Competition in 2009 and is definitely here to talk to us about coffee shops in the city. Welcome, Sam.
Hi.
We also have on the phone with us from Salem, New York, Seth McCachran. Seth is a fifth-generation farmer, and he runs the Battenkill Valley Creamery. Seth's great, that's a lot of greats. grandfather started milking cows in 1902. And today, Seth is bottling that milk. Super long line of farmers there, and we're excited to have Seth on the line. Seth, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks. So today on the show, we want to cover kind of two topics. We want to start talking about milk quality, kind of what are the factors that impact the quality of milk. And we also want to talk about distribution. But we're going to start, you know, closer. And we're going to start at the beginning. We know that milk quality is kind of based on two factors. One, the life of the animal and how it's raised. And then two, once it gets onto the truck, once it leaves the udder, what kind of happens to it?
So basically, for all you who want to know more about the farming practices, I suggest you go visit their site, battenkillcreamery.com, to learn more about the history of their farm and their practices. But today we've got a lot to cover, so we kind of want to go right into what happens post-cow, what happens after the milk leaves the udder.
So, Seth, we're going to turn it over to you because obviously you are the expert on this. And if you can just kind of walk us through, like, when you pick the milk up from the farm, what happens to it and kind of what were the decisions that you made putting the creamery together that impact the way the final product tastes and feels and looks?
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, high-quality milk basically starts from our quality care for our animals, and that's what we really take pride in. Is caring for our animals and good practices at the farm to produce high-quality raw milk. From there, our goal is just to continue that high-quality milk and pasteurize it, bottle it, and package it in a very clean, sanitized environment that will keep that high quality for the consumer once it's bottled. At the plant, we pasteurize, homogenize all our milk, except we do offer cream top milk, and our cream is non-homogenized as well. But in order for that to happen, we have to separate the milk in order to get our skim milk and our reduced fat milks. That also allows us that to get the heavy cream that we will use to make our truly homemade ice cream mix, as well as our half and half and our cream products.
Now, did you have to make all these decisions when you opened this creamy, which I believe was in, 2008? To help dictate what you would buy to produce, you know, what you just mentioned in the way that you are producing it?
Yeah, yep. We basically researched the idea of bottling our own milk on our farm. Back in 2003 was the first time we looked into it. We traveled around the Northeast looking at other farms that were bottling milk, as well as just regular processing plants. To see how they did it, what worked best for them, how we could improve on things that we saw, as well as determine what method of pasteurization we wanted to use for our milk. We use a short-time pasteurizer, which we feel gives the milk its purest flavor in terms of the most like raw milk. It doesn't have a cooked flavor like some of the other types of pasteurization do.
Well, one thing I wonder then, when you were, you know, going through this process, which, you know, took 5 years of decision making before, you know, started bottling, is if you had an idea for a market in mind. You know, we have Sam here from Everyman Espresso, who is, you know, using your end result.
Yep.
Was she the type of client you had in mind before, you know, you did your final plan and started bottling in 2008?
Oddly enough, before we started bottling, I had no idea what a great market coffee shops were. We have targeted coffee shops more so after we started bottling rather than when we first got into it. So I was kind of unaware of the amount of milk that coffee shops actually use. I would have thought it was a much lower volume, but they've proven to be great high-volume customers. So we love every coffee shop that has chosen to use our product, and we greatly appreciate it.
Cool. So we're going to talk more about like the marketing and the distribution part of all this after our break in a little bit. But for now, we kind of want to throw it to Sam here and talk about how the quality of the milk that you're producing affects her final product as a barista in you know, one of the nicest coffee shops in New York City.
So, Sam, when you open the container of milk from the Battenkill Valley Creamery, what's coming out? What's jumping out at you? Why did you decide to transition from the milk you were using before to this milk?
Well, let's see. So we started off using just regular milk from Sweet Farms, commercial, high pasteurized. Okay, you know, it was all right. But Battenkill, when you steam it, when you bring air into it, it takes it really well and very evenly. It's very sweet, and it creates a very buttery, creamy texture. Some customers even comment to me that, and they're like, "Is this half and half or is this?" And I'm like, no, it's whole milk. But there's a huge difference in texture and taste. It has a flavor of its own. And it's just very sweet when you get it to the right temperature and you're not steaming it too hot. So it's gorgeous.
So, Seth, on your end, you mentioned that you do a low-batch pasteurization. Is that the right term?
No, we do a it's a continuous short time, it's considered. And what that is we heat our milk to about 168 degrees, and it's held at that temperature for only 25 seconds. The benefit of this is that it's a little bit hotter than a batch pasteurizer, but the drawbacks of batch is that it's held at a heated temperature for about 30 minutes. So we're only about 10 degrees hotter, but a fraction of the time at a heated temperature. So it really doesn't have any time to even get a cooked flavor or change the properties of the milk in terms of how it cooks, how it steams, and different things like that.
So I think that's a big factor for people working in coffee shops or people who are cooking with the milk, is a lot of times if you're getting something that's pasteurized at a higher temperature or for a longer period of time, it already has been cooked. And Sam, you're essentially cooking the milk when you make a cappuccino, right?
Yeah, we're bringing it up to a temperature of about For cappuccinos, which is a little bit smaller drink at our place, it's going to be about $1.35 at the most. For a latte, which is a larger drink, maybe knock it up to like $1.40 Fahrenheit. But we're very careful on our temperatures because there is a point where all those sugars that are in your milk start to go past caramelization and into a state of like burnt grossness. So we're far, far from that.
You look to avoid that.
Yeah,
burnt grossness.
Which is about, that's like about 170 around there. We try to like, you know, keep it on the low side.
So how did you go from the people that you were, working with in the past to Bad and Kill Valley Creamery? How did you find out about them?
How did I find out about them? Well, we do, I've organized a lot of New York City throwdowns or latte art competitions. And actually the first time that I heard of Bat and Kill was at the, we serve Counterculture Coffee and they have a training center in Chelsea. Mm-hmm. And there was a throwdown where Seth had donated some milk and the Basis folks were there.
Basis Foods.
One of his distributors. And they talked a little bit about the milk, where it comes from, and then we all got a chance to try it.
Mm-hmm. And it made that big of a difference that you were just like, damn, I gotta try this.
Absolutely. I mean, I was already trying to source a better product to pair with my coffee, mm-hmm. and it was basically the right time and the right place.
I mean, because I know, this is Heather here, when I found out, you know, we were going to be interviewing Seth today, I was really excited because I've been seeing Bat and Kill Valley Creameries, the little logo, all over the place, like Brooklyn, New York City, everywhere. I even actually had my name on wait list at this one coffee place I would go to off Graham Avenue to get their chocolate milk because they weren't even able to get enough in and hold it in their coffee house, you know, to keep the stock. And I feel like that's probably a little bit of an issue. For coffee shops, like, you can't really store that much milk at a time. Is that a problem for you guys?
As we become higher volume and it does become a problem, especially when we go from being high volume in our like fall and spring months where we're doing a lot of business and we're needing a lot of milk, we're going through it a lot, to switching off to our downtime during the summer. It can be a little bit of an issue, and I have to be really like vigilant on counting and doing a PAR system and making sure that I know how much milk to order, mm-hmm. because it isn't something that I can just call up and say, I'm really running low tomorrow. Can I get an additional case of whole milk or two? It's just not going to happen because it's bottled on the farm on a certain time.
So Seth, where exactly is the farm? How far are you from New York City?
We're just about three and a half hours north of the city. It's about 160 miles direct, you know, as the crow flies, as they'd say. So we're just far enough that it's challenging for us to be able to deliver ourselves. So we do work with Basis as our distributor, because it is that distance where if we had to drive a truck down, it'd be 3.5 hours down, 3.5 hours back, and that's almost a full day all in itself, let alone having to go around delivering to 40 or so coffee shops in a day.
Do you know how many parking tickets you'd get? You wouldn't make any money that day.
That's very true, very true.
So before we go to a break, I just want to let our audience know, too, that Seth, you are actually at the end of your day. You guys do bottling on Thursdays. Can you tell us kind of a little bit what your schedule has been like before you started the show with us at 1?
Yes. Today has been a hectic day. I got up this morning at 11:50 p.m. in order to start our bottling day. Today we bottled... like I said, I got to the creamery just after midnight, and we're actually still working, and I had to take a short break to come join you, but I'm very happy to do so.
We really appreciate it. We like to spread the good word, so
yep.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about milk and the distribution in New York.
are back. Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report, live every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can check our archives anytime at heritageradionetwork.com to re-listen to the show, and you can podcast us by searching Farm Report on iTunes or Heritage Radio Network. We will come up there. Erin?
All right, so we are in the studio with Sam Penix of Everyman Espresso and Seth McCachran of the Battenkill Valley Creamery. Seth, I want to talk a little bit about distribution and kind of how, once you opened the creamery, you went about distributing your milk. Just to set the scene a little bit, your creamery is located across the street from the farm.
Yes.
And you guys are milking cows, and every day you're picking up milk to bottle, or how does that work?
Currently, we bottle 2 days a week on Mondays and Thursdays, and here shortly we will probably be adding a third day within the next month or two as volume grows. So on the mornings, we pick up the milk. The reason why I start so early, like I said, is so that we actually pick up the milk from the cows that were milked that night and the day before. And the milk can actually go from our cows to our bottles in less than 8 hours and be on a store shelf in less than 12.
That is some fresh milk.
Yeah.
Yes, and even the milk that will be delivered in the city tomorrow is the milk that's bottled today. So for milk to go from our cows to our bottles to a distributor to, you know, a coffee shop or a restaurant in the city, it's within, you know, 30, 40 hours, which is remarkably fresh.
So just to be clear, on the days that you're not bottling, the cows are still producing milk, right?
Yep.
And where does that milk go?
Yep. We still are members of a cooperative, as it was before we bottled our milk. All our milk was sold as more of a commodity where, you know, our price was set by the Federal Market Administrator. And it can go into numerous different products. It could go into fluid milk at another plant. It could go into cheese, yogurt, butter, you name it. And we get paid a set price based on that. So our goal was to use as much of our milk as possible and continue to grow that, putting it into a fluid milk and having control over our price rather than being a price taker.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to follow up with. I wanted to know, I mean, is it more financially you know, successful for you to be directly marketing to these coffee shops and places like, you know, here in Manhattan as opposed to the commodity market?
Yeah, very much so. And it really depends on the time of year, or really not the time of year, but the price that we receive for commodity milk. You know, it can range from a high of $24 a hundredweight, which was back in 2008, mm-hmm. Which was a very profitable year for the farm, to a low of $11.50 a hundredweight.
Wow.
In 2009, which was a horrible year. So the depending on that really determines how much more profitable the creamery is than the farm, you know, depending on outside prices.
Because for the most part, this is the same milk.
Right,
same
exactly.
Same raw product.
Yep, and it's just a value added. You know, we add the value of bottling it on our farm. Mm-hmm. We add the value of giving people the ability to know exactly where their milk comes from, and also by producing the highest quality milk.
So what's the deal with this home delivery I see on your website?
Yes.
Tell me about that. How is that working?
We just started home delivery in May of this year, and it's going pretty well. We do it locally in the Saratoga area, which is a pretty good size, small city, big town mm-hmm. area that we've kind of targeted as a, you know, highly populated area that we could be more efficient with home deliveries. In Salem, we'd have to drive 10, you know, miles in between houses some places, for home deliveries. So it's going well. It's a lot of work, a lot of labor involved, but we're pretty happy, and our customers really appreciate the service.
Are you also involved in farmers markets at all?
Yep. We're basically any market that we can kind of sell or market our milk, we are doing right now probably. Mm-hmm. We have our own store at the farm. We do farmers markets. We sell to supermarkets, small mom and pop stores, coffee shops, restaurants, and do home delivery as well. So, It keeps us busy.
So for a fresh product like milk, I mean, what's the expiration date on your milk? How long is it good for?
14 days.
14 days?
Yep.
So the distribution becomes a really big component of your business. I mean, in addition to being good at farming and then running the creamery, do you guys run your whole fleet of distribution, or how is that working? Have you partnered with someone?
We, upstate, besides the city, we deliver all our own products. So, you know, in the city, as you mentioned, we have partnered with Basis Farm to Chef, and they handle all of our delivering to New York City customers. But upstate, we do all our own deliveries and manage the store's inventories and stuff like that to keep a fresh product on the shelf.
So, Sam, when you are going to order milk, what does it look like from your end?
When I'm going to order milk? Well, I try to set a standing order so that I can have something to go off of, know exactly what is getting delivered, and then make slight changes as I see a need, or I see overabundance of milk, I can cut back then. I only have one giant milk fridge and a small one behind the bar. So I have to be really efficient with that and make sure that my deliveries that are coming twice a week are like perfect and spot on.
It also makes it easier for the guys on the other end fulfilling your orders, and they know exactly what you need and they don't have to change it every week.
Yeah, the set order is key.
Yeah.
So you have access to Sess Milk 2 days a week?
Yeah. Okay. I get deliveries on Mondays and Fridays.
And Seth, you guys are sending a truck down to the city twice a week, or how often do you have trucks going from the farm?
Right now.
So, oh, wow.
Milk gets picked up here on Tuesday that was bottled on Monday, and then we also deliver milk on Thursday and Saturday that gets delivered to the city on Monday.
So I know that's a big issue, like Sam had mentioned, for both coffee shops and restaurants and all of the markets in New York, space. You know, you just don't really have enough space in a restaurant or a coffee shop to store a whole week's supply of milk. But when you guys started, you were only delivering to the city one day a week. What does that growth process look like?
We've been very happy to see Farm to Chef grow the way it has. And like you said, Farm to Chef, originally, you know, was a kind of a cooperative, which was purchased and has really expanded since.
Yeah.
And it's greatly benefited us because, again, with a product like milk, a coffee shop can't order enough to last the whole week. And then, you know, it's kind of hard to convince a place to start using your product if it's, you know, the first half of the week will be our product, the second half of the week will be another product. So, you know, it kind of takes back from the benefit of supporting local, using a higher quality product, if you're using it sporadically. So, you know, the increased delivery days to three different possible days has really helped us and grown our volume.
And I'm sure Sam would agree that, you know, her getting a consistent product for you makes her want to work with you more as other coffee shops would, because they want to be sure they're always, you know, producing
absolutely
a product that is consistent.
Yeah, we definitely want to support local farmers and people who are taking the initiative to produce a better product, but also do it sustainably. It just seems really kind and nice and great, and I'm excited. We actually were interested in the milk, using the milk prior to when you started delivering multiple times, but we just weren't able to do it until we could get twice a week deliveries.
Awesome. Well,
yeah.
Seth, do you feel that there's going to be like a change in the way the demand dictates the deliveries? I mean, is there more of a demand from this local region that we're talking about here in New York and Brooklyn?
Yeah, I mean, we're still in the growth mode, you know. We've been only operating for 2.5 years now. So for us, just getting our name out there more and more and letting people know about us, we continually get calls from new places that are interested and want our product.
That's wonderful.
So, yeah, when I think about coffee shops, I mean, there's been this whole revival of sourcing your coffee, knowing there's a fair trade movement, there's single origin coffee. You go into shops and they have like a whole list of different.
It's like a wine list. It has like every note, every blend, like every flavor profile.
And it's been interesting, like with this rise in focus in coffee and coffee shops, I feel like there's this new trend of the milk, the other kind of main ingredient. And it's cool that, Seth, your milk is single origin milk. I mean, it's only coming from one farm, and that's not normally the case if you're just buying commodity milk, correct?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we really take pride in that people can come to the farm, see where their product comes from, see where it's bottled, and know exactly what they're getting. We've always said we'll never get to the point where we're bringing in other milk. Not to say that it's not as high quality milk that another farm might have, but we want it to be single source. People know exactly where their product comes from, and that's a big, you know, differentiator between us and other products, is that it is a single source farm that produces the milk for the creamery.
Now, and I know, I mean, the fact that your day is like about to end because you started like over 14 hours ago, I wonder, do you guys invite people up to the farm to kind of see how the creamery works, or do you ever, I'm sorry?
Yes, we do. Yep. It can be a challenge giving tours and telling people how it works while we're bottling. Mm-hmm. However, a lot of people do like to come up. We have an observation window that people can just come up and see while we're bottling. We do start early now. We're doing more and more product. We do go into the afternoon, but previously we were kind of done before most people got up. But now it does take us longer, so we're still bottling at about 1:30 now.
Do people have to like reach out to you to ask permission to come up? Is there a place they can go or somewhere they can email you to find out about coming up to see how this all works?
Yep. If people are interested in tours or coming up to visit, they're welcome to just stop up if they just want to watch while we're bottling on a Monday or a Thursday.
Okay.
Or they can email us either at Seth@Batenkill Creamery or Yvonne, who handles my tours and marketing, is at marketing@batenkillcreamery.com.
Awesome. So I'll have all those links up on our archive for after the show.
Yep.
And then what about you, Sam? Do we have any like exciting events that you're putting together for any more of these like barista showdowns?
Well, basically you can check out the Everyman Espresso Facebook page or my blog, Everyman Espresso, nyc.blogspot.com. It's a real pleasure to work with Batenkill. I think it's pretty much the best milk that I could be getting right now, and it's great. It's phenomenal.
So here we are, Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report, making the connection, bringing it from crop to cup. Gonna say goodbye for today, and we hope to have you tune in next week. We'll be here, Heather Hyman and
Aaron Fairbanks. Thanks a lot. Thanks,
Beth.
Thanks, Sam.
Have a good day.
You as well.